Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to a groundbreaking episode of Two Bald Guys. Two Bald Guys Live. Two Bald Guys Talking Safety Live. But what's really interesting about this, it just came to me, Jewel. So before we even do our normal early ramble.
I'm worrying at this moment.
Everyone, this legitimately just came to me about 25 seconds ago. We are doing a podcast, which is kind of, you know, I guess in a time, it was the way of the future. But now we're doing it live, which is actually like a live broadcast of a radio show, which is old and been done for 70 years. So we are new and old.
We certainly are. You're the new, I'm the old.
So be it.
Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety Live. And so here we've got no opportunity, Langdon, for bloops. We've got no opportunity for retakes. This is real. So it may be two bald guys rambling about safety as opposed to talking about safety, because we don't have the opportunity for any of those pesky edits that we will admit to happen occasionally. Yeah. Okay. We've also new and innovatively, we've changed some of our tech. So you might notice that we're wearing headphones, which we've not previously done. So I went for the discreet. You'll notice I've gone for the discreet, close to the head, black headphones. Whereas Langdon appears to be looking like something out of a sci-fi film, with two great big silver cans on the size of his head.
I'm ready to play some music. Just get straight to the good stuff. You know, yeah, that's what these are.
I'm jealous. They're looking good. They're looking very funky.
These are a gift from my wife a few years ago. And, you know, when you work at home, you don't really need a lot of headphones, so they don't get worn as much as they used to. But, yeah. Here we are. How are things with you, Jules?
Looking good. Yeah, good. It did stop raining in the UK briefly this morning. It is now raining again. Being a Brit, we always like to talk about the weather. So, how are things with you?
You know, they're good. We're sunny here. It's been 3 days of very nice weather, finally turning the corner, hopefully. And it's also, now that we're live, I can say this, and it's true. This is one of those big weeks that we have. If you're a golf fan, Jules, it's the Players' Championship starting tomorrow.
Players' Championship. And then what's coming up after Players that, Langdon?
Oh, the Masters. But that's like in a month. So we, you know, we don't want to jump the gun too much.
And we don't want to let everybody know, do we, Langdon, that you have the opportunity to go to the Masters each year. And so far, you've failed to invite your bald guy mate to come with you, but we are waiting expectantly for the invitation.
This is just going on 2 years strong now, so you know it's coming. This is the second year. Last year, obviously, it was my wife. And this year, it's my dad. So we're going to get there. You know, it takes time.
Okay. You will notice in my background there is a Masters cap there. So that was my gift from Langdon last year. So I'm waiting expectantly for my gift this year. So,
this could get out of hand. I feel like I'm going to just go ahead and need to take you so I don't have to keep giving you gifts.
Okay. But I do want to go on.
No, please. I insist.
This is authentic. We are live. You can see we're talking over each other already. It could become even more authentic because Langdon has a sick child at home who hasn't gone to school. So if you hear some noise in the background, that is authentic Nashville children
screaming and crying.
I was just going to say thank you to everybody who's joined us. I noticed Simon Jones, friend of the podcast, has registered a previous guest, so we may get Simon onto a live podcast in the future. I did want to mention, talking about Simon, that for anybody who's going to be in the UK on the 30th of April, One Bald Guy will be at the health and safety event at the NEC, and we're hosting a panel discussion, which will be great, with some guests from the podcast. So Simon will be there, along with Karen Hewitt, also Phil Roberts, and Maria Anderson from Cambridge Assessment is going to join us as well. So really looking forward to getting that great group of safety professionals together, and we're going to talk about all sorts of things, including leadership, engagement, and the potential of actually taking a safety career and moving it into other areas of a business, which will be a really interesting discussion. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's always good, because you see, whether it seems like starting off in health and safety is, and then progressing out, to me, is kind of the better, you know, the better avenue for those, for safety professionals a lot of times, just because they've seen it. But on the flip side, you know, I think it's a good profession, a good, an excellent profession actually to get into, just because you start seeing things from a different light, right? Whether it's in the manufacturing, construction, you really start, whatever industry it is, you start seeing things and thinking things differently. And that helps really put a picture, which will go in line to what we're going to talk about in a few minutes. It kind of helps paint that picture of overall business and what that looks like and what you want to see going forward, right? So that'll be good. I hate that I'm missing it.
I think it'd be a great discussion. I mean, you were meant to be there last year, but you're playing like you're down. You're not even trying this year, so it's just going to be this.
Was this the way? No, I was at this one. Wasn't I at this event last year?
No. This was the one where
we had two events in Birmingham.
Yeah, you definitely missed this one. So
okay,
yeah. There was a quick.
Thank goodness, I'm not doing that again.
There was a quick reset at the last minute, because Langdon's plane sat on the tarmac for 5 hours and didn't move. So,
Like 7 hours in Newark, New Jersey, which, side note, everyone, thumbs down.
That's a thumbs down if you're just listening. I think that'll be a great conversation. And I know it's not what we're talking about today, but when you think about all the skills that a safety professional needs and has and sort of develops, sort of thinking about building processes, thinking about developing culture, thinking about that sort of requirement to be able to coach, that in-depth knowledge of an organization and the business processes, it actually is a great grounding, isn't it, then, for somebody to then move into a senior leadership position. And actually, if that happens, there's then this sort of great position that you've got, that you've actually got that safety advocate sort of at the top of an organization, which is really powerful, and sort of starts to relate exactly, makes a really neat segue, doesn't it, into what we want to talk about today. So we've gone in strong today, haven't we, Langdon, in terms of our description. We haven't said, oh, what's the problem with safety culture, or oh, we're not fans of safety culture. We've gone really strong. We've said we hate safety culture. Which might sound really counterintuitive to people who've not really listened to us before or who don't know us. So let's get into it, and let's start talking about what is the danger of safety culture, or talking about creating a safety culture.
You know, and I think that's a good one, because it's been a while. I've never been a proponent of a safety culture, right? And why is that? I mean, it's pretty fair to say, if you look at it and you say that your organization has a safety culture, yep, that's great. Not going to negate it. But what about your business? What about your productivity? What about the, in general, operations? The people? There's a lot of cultures that exist. And I know we'll jump the gun, or I don't want to jump the gun. I know we're going to get there in a few minutes of what that really kind of start looks like, and what people, I'm sure many how they're tying that in. But I think if we don't watch out, you just start throwing that term out loosely, and you really miss what you're trying to say, or what the point of it is. And that's, to me, that's why I'm not a big proponent. I can recall being in a meeting face to face, this was pre-COVID, and actually saying, you know, I don't like safety culture. And I just remember getting all kinds of looks, like, he has blasphemed the safety realm. And I was like, hey, you know, let's talk about this. And I gave my perspective. And, you know, I got some agreeance. Some people, I'm sure, still didn't, you know, they didn't. And that's fine. It was just my perspective. And what I still hold to is, I think it's a very narrow-minded thought to think of it in the historical view of how we talk and think safety culture.
It was a really fashionable thing, wasn't it? And I'll hold my hands up to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, in sort of 10, 15 years ago, the in thing was to talk about creating a safety culture. Yeah. And I'll hold my hands up and say, yeah, I was kind of bought into that idea. We've got a really good sort of image that we're going to put on the screen, which sort of illustrates one of the problems, though, which is the danger of safety culture is that what we saw all the time was organizations trying to, or health and safety teams trying to create this safety culture. But actually, unless it sort of aligned perfectly to the business culture and the things that were happening at the top of the business, the danger always is that business culture is bigger, and it's more powerful. It's going to overpower safety culture, and the priorities of the business will be the priorities that get focused on, not those of around safety. So we'll talk later about moving that into safe operations. And this sort of really started to come home. The first thing that really triggered it with me was, and I think I've said this before, was talking to a guy in New Zealand, and he nearly threw a cup of coffee over me when I mentioned the phrase safety culture. And he said, "Well, everyone stop talking about safety culture." And I was a bit like you with your blasphemers, was I was sat there thinking, what's this guy going on about? But he made really good sense. He had that conversation that I've just talked about there, which is the danger of safety culture is it's this singular thing that we're trying to create separately. And unless the whole business gets behind it, it just doesn't work. And inherently, businesses, just being pragmatic, businesses have other focuses, and those are the things that people will be focused on and will work towards. And if you stop and think, we're really lucky, aren't we, Langdon? How many different businesses have we got to go and visit and to sort of see in action as part of the jobs that we've had? It's probably thousands. Yeah. And I just reflect back on having done this for many years now, and you would typically go and see an organization, you would be invited in to talk to the safety team, and you'd end up walking into an office and there'd be one person in that office, and it'd be the maybe the head of safety, the safety manager, whatever the job title was. And commonly we're talking about a fairly major change project that was being considered. Yeah. And there's nobody there but one or two people from safety or environmental or sustainability. You think about any other major change project in an organization, you'd have more people there for a start. And you probably have people there from senior leadership because it's an important project. Yeah. And it just really started to ram it home to me that safe, not just safety culture, but the safety teams in many cases were isolated. They were beavering away, yeah, trying to do what they could to improve things around safety. But actually, it was in most of the time it was being done separately, and it was and sometimes at odds to what people were trying to do in the rest of the organization. Yeah. So I think that was my sort of real light bulb moment around safety culture, was we've got to change the approach here, and actually we've got to start trying to integrate not just culture, but the safety team more into the day-to-day activities of an organization. That was by the way. That was one ball guy rambling.
No, I'm kidding.
Wake up.
But that's what it's about, right? No, I agree, honestly. And it was one of those, for me, if you think about it, and we actually, I think it's, has our COA story gone? Either way, podcast.
Yeah.
Those of you that don't, Alcoa, we kind of did a recap. I mean, it's been 30 years, but still, you'll get where I'm going with this. They made, you know, Paul, he didn't just make a safety culture. He made EHS, the importance of safety, why it matters. He made it the value. So you can have the priority versus values conversation, you know, whatever. But he made it a value and a part of the organizational culture. He made health and safety. That's why it matters. Because, you know, so for that instance, he embedded it in all things. And that's what we try to get to. And I'm sure, I don't want to gate. I think there are a lot of organizations that that's what they do. When they say safety culture, they're thinking about it in that light. But if you don't watch out to your frontline workers, if you're, you know, if the safety cop comes out, because like you just said, it's, you know, I've been fortunate, whether I was managing EHS, whether I was going out consulting, whether it was consulting for, or, you know, broader than just actual health and safety consulting, but looking at transitional programs, processes, which is probably what I do more now for sure. It's still that same conversation that if you don't watch out, you go into these companies, you're talking to them, and you get so caught up on just talking about safety, but not really, and obviously that's what we do, but not thinking about it from taking that step back and how does this fit into the job? You know, it's like when people talk about, you know, operational excellence. Well, how do we get an excellent, true excellent culture? How do we, you know, we want to incorporate all human factors. We really want to be, you know, above and beyond. And that's great. But if your organization doesn't have people wanting to report yet, they don't understand the importance of just, if you see something, you say it, of communicating, of establishing a good level of camaraderie with one another. But I do think if you can't do that, right, do you think that you're going to be able to hit that top level that we're talking about? Not yet. It's going to take time. Because a big part of health and safety, and this is from my experience again, and I know you and I've talked about it in yours as well, is change management. Because you have to get everyone bought into understanding, what are we wanting to do? Why are we changing? And there's a lot of things that play a role in why people work, why they do what they do at work, why they want to do what they do at work. So there's a lot to think about. So when we really take a step back and think, what is safety culture? What does it mean? Why are we wanting to debunk it, so to speak? It's because it doesn't fit the conversation that we're trying to have in organizations.
Let me ask you a question. I've got a question for you, Langdon. What's the crappiest place that you've ever worked at? I'm a bit older than you, and I've worked at a few more places, so I might have got a few more examples. But yeah, what's the crappiest place you've ever worked at?
Well, what am I supposed to say right now? I mean, it's not Evotech, so sorry. I mean, I won't say the name. The place that I was. I mean, everyone could see where I was on LinkedIn, so there's that. I think what it started off as was great, and towards the end, I would say the culture, it changed as a whole, not just safety. So we'll go with that.
Okay. So what was the culture like? Or what did it become?
Sorry. So if that's there's a lag, which makes like it that. Kind of funny. Like there is a lag. It was one of those that was very, it was a facade, I think is the best way to put it a lot of times, of what was being portrayed versus what was actually there.
So what were the actual bits that didn't work so well or were negative?
Not even the health and safety, but it was, whether it be the communication, say one thing, do another. You know, you've heard me talk about the, and I won't dive into it, but the to-do, the post-it notes.
Remember putting it on, having that.
That's it.
Tell the story. Tell the story.
I'll do a quick synopsis here. So we were having a together. It was a lot of people working together. And this was the guy who is over it was, I guess it was sales enablement and something else. I don't remember what his title was, but coming up with all these great ideas, everyone working together. And I was, you know, I don't know if I was cynical or what, but myself and a couple of other, the health and safety guys were all thinking, oh, this is pointless. We've, you know, whatever, But we came up with all these great ideas. We wrote them on post-it notes. We put them on a wall that was over 10 foot long. And we were thinking, this has been actually a fantastic value add. So he didn't take a picture, the leader, didn't do anything like that. And at the end of the session, he was like, thank you all for this great exercise. And we were stayed back talking, and he never took a picture, might I add. Took every one of them off and threw them in the trash. Yeah. That was what our culture had become. And these were things from operations to people to health and safety to, you know, anything, but they all went in the trash.
Yeah. And I had a very similar one. I used to work for a big organization in the UK. And again, we won't mention any names. Just look on my LinkedIn profile. You can work it out. But again, I can remember I was at a management conference, and we were sent off in small groups to discuss some key questions and come up with some thoughts and ideas. So we're in this breakout room, and we're writing things up on a flip chart and coming up with ideas. And one of the senior people walked in, looked at the flip chart, ripped it off and said, no, you've got that all wrong, and started to write his own things on it. And again, it's that same cultural thing of, yeah, we've sent you away to consider this, but actually we've got the answers already. You just didn't know about it. But the reason for the question, Langdon, I'll tell you about my crappiest experience. I work for an organization in Chesterfield. This is quite a long time ago now. Chesterfield's this smallish town in the UK. And all I can say is that the culture was poisonous. So the culture was just aggressive. It was acceptable to shout and bawl at people. It was just a really toxic culture. And the reason for talking about that is it goes back to that image that we put up on the screen. If that's the company culture, how comfortable are people seriously going to be about putting their hand up and reporting things relating to safety, or reporting ideas or suggestions? Just dead simple, that is not going to happen, is it? Because people are going to be too worried about potentially what's the reaction here. Yeah, what's going to happen if I report something negative that's happened? So absolutely key to actually driving a culture of safety, and that's different to safety culture. So actually driving a culture of safety is trying to influence the overall business culture and change that to one that's more progressive and positive, and one where people react in the right way. And I think we've talked about this loads on the podcast, but I think it's a really great point is, as a safety professional now, I think one of the key things that we've got to become really good at is not just delivering reports to management and senior leadership, but being confident enough to go and coach them around the things that we would like them to do and the things that they should be thinking about, not just in specific communications, but in all of their communications. And you're going to come onto this in a minute, I'm sure, in terms of safe operations, but even the unconscious things that leadership do around the conversations that they have can either have a negative or a positive effect. Mm-hmm. So if somebody in senior leadership, we have a town hall every couple of weeks where the whole business gets together and the senior team talk to us and people talk about the things that they do within the business. So it's a great communication tool. But even in that kind of positive scenario, if leadership use the wrong words, it can have unconsciously a really negative effect on people. So if, for example, leadership talks about production and they're banging the drum that we've got to hit certain numbers, we've got to hit these numbers, and that's all that's discussed, what are people going to focus on? Just inherently, and it's not malicious, they'll go away and they'll focus on hitting the numbers that they've been asked to hit. They won't go away with a mindset of, I've got to hit those numbers safely. So even coaching leadership around the words that they use so that they subtly change it, so that actually when they're talking about hitting the numbers, it's, we want to hit the numbers, and actually we want to do it in this way. So we want to do it in a safe way. All of a sudden, people start to think, right, I've got to hit the numbers, but also I've got to think about safety whilst I'm going about doing it. So I think the whole thing around culture is actually safety becomes a really great, I want to say lever, but you're going to say lever. Okay. But it becomes a really great way of actually, if we can start to think about improving the overall business culture, safety becomes a great lever to actually creating a far better environment in an organization, which then has that ripple effect that we talk about in terms of people become better at their jobs, we get better staff retention, we get better outputs, and so on. So that's a really key thing. And really simply, I stop and think about that organization in Chesterfield. And that was where I started, I suppose, my enlightenment, my journey towards a focus on safety, because it was probably the most unsafe place that I've ever worked in. And because there was just no focus. There was no focus at all on doing things safely. It was just about getting the job done. And I remember a couple of things. I remember a guy injuring two of the fingers on his hand. Quite funny, because we went and played a game of golf. We had a little internal golf tournament, and he went all the way around with a putter because he couldn't actually hold a golf club. But the really serious one was a guy who had his right arm ripped off in an incident working for that organization. So actually, to me, whilst it was a pretty horrible experience to be employed there, it's been a great learning for me in terms of some of the things that we should think about, some of the things we should do if we're going to really drive a far better culture in an organization, and the value overall of having that better culture.
Well, that's why we need to do something, Jules. We need...
Okay, what are we...
This is big.
I'm ready.
We need to explode this safety culture nonsense. And the light shined upon safe operations.
See, this is the value of joining a live podcast, isn't it? We've even got gimmicks. Yeah.
That's well, and it's not like, and to be fair, we've been talking about this for like a year, so it's not like it's really that new, but now it is in a flashy new way. But I do think there is a lot to that for what, you know, everything you just alluded to, for what we, you know, for what we're trying to get across. Whenever, you know, one of the first things whenever I'm sitting on a call, whenever we're talking health and safety, if I'm going out doing some type of consulting, it's very much learning, what does your organization look like? What do you do? How do people communicate? You know, and I know we've seen before, a negative culture is going to be prevalent if you don't watch out and you're not taking organizational buy-in. And that's because what happens, any positive gain that comes, if you have an overarching negative culture, kind of like what you were talking about a few moments ago, it doesn't matter what positive attribute comes, that negative culture is typically going to just eat it alive. And that's why we have to keep kind of embodying that safe operations mindset, that health and safety into everything we do, and making it a value, right? And if you want to say, you know, priorities, you like that perspective, okay, that's great. Then make it a priority that never changes. And that's what we have to watch out for, because if we don't, it's really easy to get so caught up in the profits, in the productivity of the business, because, right, we have to be profitable. There's a slide that I show a lot whenever I'm doing presentations or working. And I know, I think we've talked about it here, but if you really want to equal profits for a business, what do we have to have? Quality, productivity, and health and safety. So there are three goals that help derive that one outcome. And think about it, anytime, I mean, you can look on, OSHA has a great site called the Safety Pace Calculator. I mean, you can look at workers' compensation, you know, the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, to see how much incidents are costing. So there are lots of resources out there to where you can see how much a single incident, let's say, costs, the direct and indirect cost associated with that. Well, what does that do to the overarching profit? That if I'm working, if I'm, you know, at an organization where we're raking in the money, we're, you know, $1 million every year, I mean, that's not very big, but you know what I mean, for sake of this conversation. And I begin having injuries where someone every, you know, let's say three people a year are getting injured. And that's costing me 30, 50, maybe more. And it's a continual injury. Let's say it's an MSD where, you know, a back injury where that's going to continue on. That's going to continue costing. And sooner or later, I'm probably going to have to put, especially if it's some type of manual handling or something, I might have to replace that worker. So we know, what does that do to the overarching profits, quote unquote? It's going to start nicking into that, which means my quality is going to have to go higher. My productivity is going to have to go up. And what I'm selling that item for, whatever it is, it's going to have to go up. But if they're all in congruence with one another, that's when you start seeing that positive output for an organization. And it's one of those things that I think we've talked about before, and we see the importance of health and safety, whether you're on the job, whether you're off the job. And honestly, I would say the C word that should never be named, COVID. What we saw with it was, it really did kind of, didn't it? I mean, it breached the gap, so to speak, of off the job, on the job, and community, of the importance of health and safety. And I would have never thought this, but if you look at it and think post-COVID, I think we're still doing better, but at the same time, we've actually, I dare say, we have settled back to the way things were pre. And for the most part, that is probably, I think there were certain things that we could have done better with. And thinking about it from an organizational culture, the wellness, the well-being aspects, total worker health, there's a lot of avenues where that really makes a vital impact into the organization. So as we continue on, I think it's imperative that we think about that. When we think of safe operations, when we think of health and safety, it's understanding that what I do at home directly affects what happens in the workplace and vice versa. So it's not just about, again, our safety culture at work. It's about, what do we do every day within our jobs or our task or our activities, quote unquote.
Yep. Just whilst I'm thinking about it as well, if anybody's got any questions, if they want to drop them into the comments, and we'll do our best to answer them. And I suppose, just going back to a couple of points you made there, first of all, around the sort of profitability and the quality side of things. We often sort of talk about Sydney Decker, don't we? And Sydney Decker, don't just take our word for this. Go and look at the works of people like Sydney Decker, who can clearly point to this correlation between safe sites, safe organisations are more profitable and more successful. Yeah. Because people are bought into it. They want to do a good job, and it drives that sort of productivity and profitability for an organization. And I suppose the second point there was, when you're talking about the overall well-being of an individual, not just sort of thinking about them within the workplace, several people that we've talked to have been involved in sort of serious incidents absolutely clearly say to us that they approached when they went into the workplace, their head probably wasn't in the right place, and that was a contributor towards the incident. So the things are absolutely linked. Langner, I'm just conscious of time. I think we do like to give some top tips, don't we? So we should think about some top tips in terms of, it's not easy to wave that magic wand and Harry Potter style and make a culture change and make safety a part.
Expelliarmus.
Well done. You've done better than I could with that. Yeah. Okay. So should we ever think about some of the things that we can do to start to just gradually start to change the perception of safety within our business and our organization? Do you want to go first?
I would love to. And I feel like this is a curveball, because I don't recall talking about this, but you know what? It's in the bag anyways.
I know you're ready for it.
Thank you. I think before, you know, and I dare say anything when we think about it from an EHS perspective, but it really operationally as a whole, you have to be introspective. whenever, you know, that's the whole point of a gap analysis. For example, when I like to send those out to organizations, let's just get a baseline understanding where you are. It's be introspective and be real, meaning let's understand where are we? Where are we within our health and safety journey? Where are we within our true organizational journey? You know, you brought up the likes of Sydney Decker and Todd Conklin and a lot of that, what I was, you know, kind of alluded to at the very beginning, when you think of human performance, human factors, human organizational performance, I should say, a lot of organizations aren't at that point yet, and that's fine. It is being, having that understanding of where you are. So one of the most important things as you kind of think about tackling a lot of what we've discussed, or you're wanting to kind of find tidbits of how you can improve, it's very much be introspective and real and understand that if you are a one-off health and safety professional in your organization, how you view it is probably different from how Jimmy or Julie on the front lines view it, which is probably different from how your senior level management views it. So understanding that, let's be introspective and be real as to what can we do to start deriving a change. So introspection is numero uno.
So top tip number one, don't kid yourselves. Is that right?
I can't say this very often, but you actually summarized it in a lot shorter version than myself. So, yes.
Very neatly. I'm going to go with ownership and accountability, Langdon. And I think one of the big dangers is that within organizations, people report things or things are meant to be happening, and actually nobody, things don't get closed out, things don't get dealt with properly, people don't own things, and people don't feed back on the things that have happened. So again, if we ask people to report things and they never ever hear anything as a result of reporting those things, because there is no ownership and there is no accountability, people very quickly say, well, why am I bothering doing this, and stop doing it. So again, crappy systems, crappy processes can be a contributor to that, because people can hide behind those crappy systems and crappy processes. So I think it's about having robust processes in place that actually mean that people have to do the things that they say they're going to do, and we can then feed back to the organization about those, and we can show the value of what's been achieved. Okay, top tip number two, ownership and accountability.
I like it. And then I think for me, number three would be champions. Find your organizational champions. And for me, that's, it goes into honestly what you just said. So if you don't have that ownership, you don't have that accountability, you know, hey, we have a health and safety program, but that's it. All right. Find a champ, either be the champion or find someone to help you. You know, a champion can be multiple people, to help you deem where do we need to put priorities. After we've been introspective, we see it. Where do we need to put priorities to then let's refine a process or create a process, whatever it is. So for me, number three, it's be and find your organizational champions to push that and help that overall culture.
And I think on that one, when we talk about leaders in safety, it doesn't necessarily need to be related to status or job roles within an organization. It's actually it's about finding the right people, isn't it? And the people who are passionate and want to do something about it. It's finding those people because they can be a leader in their own area of the organization.
For sure.
What am I going to think about? I think my next top tip is I'm going to say don't do the same old, same old. And I think particularly if you've used certain people to do things before and it's not landed and they haven't got credibility within your organization, I think sometimes you've just got to be pragmatic enough to say, right, let's take a different approach, but maybe let's use different people. Because actually, if we just try to do things in the same old way, it gets the same old reception. So I think you've got to always be looking at how can we tweak it, make it a bit more imaginative or innovative, and do things differently. Top tip number four, don't do the same old, same old.
I would say for me, I would round out a five personally. So let's see if we would agree on this last one. My last one would be just make it a value, honestly.
Who's
make it a continued priority? Everyone's. That's the thing. If you think about what you just said, true health and safety is going to be done on the frontline worker, meaning they're the ones out there, they're the ones operating. So they have to see the value. Leadership has to see the value, whether it be from an ROI perspective or whatever you want to call it. Mid-level safety managers ourselves, we have to see the value, which most of the time we do, but we have to see the value to help kind of portray that to others, to help create learning for them, learning for the senior level management or execs. So if we make it a value, the Alcoa way, the Paul O'Neill way, if we, or any organizations that if you look at, you know, every year NSC puts out a thing, top safety companies, if they make values of health and safety and understand where that safe operations kind of goes, then you start seeing positive changes for this perspective that we're talking about. But it ultimately, I think we have to have positive organizational cultural values to actually want to make changes.
I'm going to tweak that one slightly if I can, which is
no.
And I think the important thing, I'm going to ignore you and carry on. I think the important thing is what you said about actually it's the frontline workers, it's the people at the sharp end who really are going to make safety work or not work in an organization. How do I say this politely? There are some cynical people out there, and that's cynical true. People aren't going to be motivated by, they're not going to be motivated by business values. They're not going to be motivated by business objectives. So what we've got to do is think about how as safety professionals, we can train people. So how can we train people to recognize why safety is worth doing for themselves? So it's the classic what's in it for me, isn't it, Langdon? It's that, why should I do safety? And it might be as simple as, what are the things that are really important to you outside of the workplace? So how do we make sure that we get you back home in a fit state to be able to do those things that are really important to you? Mm-hmm. And I think the danger is if we start saying it's a business priority or a business value, that doesn't resonate with a lot of people in organizations. Just being pragmatic about it. There are cynical people out there. It has been said that I'm one of them. Okay. So no, not at all. But so what we've got to do is it's the classic what's in it for me. And it's not about money. It's not about status. It's actually about those sort of real things that make it important for somebody to just try and do safety properly. Okay.
I agree with that.
Good. We agree.
Well, and I think it is because I don't think anyone wants to be negligent, right? You know, on our maturity model, we have negligent. It's not that a lot of people, I mean, there are some, don't get me wrong, they want to do something to create an adverse negative effect. But what's in it for me is a very powerful, you know, what's in it for me? And then you're even better when you're like, what's in it for Billy who works beside me? So no, I will allow that to come into the last point.
I do have one more. I've got one more. I think we should finish with one more, which is, I think as safety people, we've got to get out of the safety office. We've got to get away from sitting behind desks and computers and creating reports. And actually what we've got to ensure is that we get out there on the shop floor and we're visible. So whether that's in team meetings, whether it's going out and coaching people at the workplace, doing their job, actually what we've got to do is we've got to be really visible to the broader organization. And I think things like being involved in team meetings, so we can have a safety discussion as part of the day-to-day operations, is a really important part of what safety people need to do moving forwards.
Yep, I agree. Okay. Nothing to add.
Good conversation. I think we're nearing the end of our first live conversation. I suppose the last last question is, have we got any questions? I'm trying to, maybe just pausing there a moment because I'm trying to look at three screens at the moment just to see if we've got any questions coming in. If we haven't, I hope people have had a good listen. I hope they've enjoyed listening to two bald guys rambling about safety. We do intend to do this on a regular basis now. So I think we're planning to do this every couple of weeks now, aren't we? So go live and potentially we'll bring some guests into the mix where we can. And I suppose what would be really good is we'll talk all day anyway. We like talking to one another. But if anybody out there in LinkedIn land or podcast world has got any subjects that are really close to their heart and they'd like us to talk about, drop us a note and we'll make sure that we put it on the list of subjects that we're going to discuss and talk about.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if anyone has any questions, well, I think we are supposed to give it a couple of minutes just in case anyone has any questions, feel free. And even if we don't get to it, it is something that we can answer at a later date or email or some other form. I do still find it funny since that hit me though, while I'll kind of jabber for a moment, that every couple of weeks we're now doing live podcasts, which are basically live radio shows, which have been done for a long time. So the future is now the past, everyone. Welcome to 1984.
What goes around comes around. I would go back further than 1984, actually.
You know what? We could change it now. We could do some Paul Harvey. Do you know Paul Harvey?
No.
Oh, Jules. We have some homework for you to listen to some old Paul Harvey. Yeah. Good day.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get the family grouped around the radio to listen to the Jules and Langdon radio show.
Get antennas right. Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't see any questions coming in. Don't be shy, people. In future, send us some questions. Send us some subjects. We have really enjoyed doing this, and we look forward to catching up again in a couple of weeks. Langdon, I'm going to let you sign us off with your child bawling in the background in your normal normal fashion. Take it away.
I will say it is shocking how much more this avenue that we're using, everyone, it's a different platform that we're using versus usual. It picks up a lot more if you can hear the scream. But yes, that was an angry scream, I think. But for those of you out there, as you listen to us, as you took a journey with us through safety culture to safe operations, we hope that you are able to maintain that in all of your daily activities, that you keep mind of health and safety and how you can be of value to others. And ultimately, try to stay safe out there and watch each other's back. Everyone, really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts. And in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days, and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.